Welcome, everybody, to the first episode of the Miss Spots podcast. My name is Mike. I am joined by my friend Kevin.
Yes, I'm Kevin.
Kevin weighs I don't know how much and hails from Detroit, Michigan. Do you have a nickname that you should be known as?
I don't, but hopefully I'll get one soon.
Yeah, we'll come
still,
up with
I'm
that.
I'm still working
over time.
On my character.
Yes. This is a podcast about pro wrestling. We are pretty much lifelong pro wrestling fans. Kevin has had a little bit of a revitalization.
Absolutely. And thanks to you.
Yeah, I invited him to come watch WrestleMania 30 at my house. And
after not watching wrestling for maybe 6-7 years, something in that neighborhood.
Yeah, and now he's back into the game, watching Raw, watching the pay-per-views, and...
And overall, spending way too much time reading dirt sheets and pro wrestling in general.
You've gone through the network and watched all of the WrestleManias.
I'm up to, what did I say, Survivor Series 96 in synchronization and order from the very beginning, from the first WWF at that time pay-per-view.
That and you've seen your fair share of ridiculousness already.
Yes, absolutely.
But this is just, an outlet for us to, instead of just bothering our coworkers about our banter about pro wrestling that makes no sense to them, we'll just record ourselves doing it. And if anyone wants to actually listen to what we have to say, then good for you.
Well, this will give me something to listen to while I'm trying to fall asleep. I love the sound of my own voice.
So we just got finished watching SummerSlam. And we decided to just kick off our first episode as being a rehasher of the pay-per-view. Overall, of the show, what did you think?
It was a C, I'd say. There was some interest. I mean, having Ziggler win the Intercontinental Championship, that was really great. Brock had to win the title today. That kind of had to happen. It was pretty much everyone expected it to happen. I thought some of the booking, and we'll get into that as we break down the matches, was kind of suspect and kind of strange. It might, in hindsight, a couple months from now, it might look much better because it wasn't cookie cutter like you expect. Mm-hmm. And that's always a good thing when they give you something you're not expecting. I just think some of it was a little bit shoddy and a little bit spotty in the way they put it together.
Yeah, I'd probably go around that C area. Middle of the road, really, for a pay-per-view. Though, if you look at it this way, that's pretty disappointing, though, for one of the four big pay-per-views of the year.
Especially with the match that would be the biggest crowd gatherer of Lesnar and Cena, which is supposed to be their big get to keep people hooked into the network and buying the network. But let's start off with the first match, which was on the pre-show, which I didn't watch. I was getting pizza. I wasn't here yet. Go ahead, Mike.
You just missed it right. When you got here. And I didn't know that this was a match until maybe an hour or so ahead when I just wanted to get the full match listings and pulled up the Wikipedia page and saw RVD and Cesaro were on the kickoff show, the pre-show. We're both big Cesaro fans. And we've been rather disappointed with his bookings as of late. And I was really hoping that this would be a nice turnaround. A decent match that Cesaro got in some really big offense in it. There was no big swing, but he had some pretty stiff-looking uppercuts in there. But then RVD won with the frog splash. And once again, Cesaro is just kind of brushed to the side.
Well, I think I said that when I came in and you explained to me that match was on there, and I believe that on Raw tomorrow, Cesaro is going to lose a match to a dining room table. I think that for the most part, he must have offended Stephanie McMahon or Vince. I don't know what he did, but you had one of the guys who was extremely hot, paired up with the best manager, probably of all time, him or Heenan, and looked like he was going to be the next big thing, at least a major push over the next year to get him to that main event level. And they've taken him and just squashed him like a bug. And now he gets in some good offense. People are still behind him when he gets in offense on the Raw and SmackDown. But he's nowhere. They split him from Heyman with no explanation whatsoever. It's a head scratcher, to say the least.
It's amazing how a little over 4 months ago at WrestleMania, you had the breaking up of the Real Americans, and you couldn't have swapped their places more easily. You have Swagger and Cesaro completely swapped. Now, Swagger is getting over and in a program that he's looking strong in, and we'll get to his match later, but Cesaro now just looks like he was the second fiddle in that group.
He looks like another guy, and there's so many the other guys right now. I mean, just look at that lumberjack match. All the guys around the ring, none of them, I mean, they all had their gimmicks, and they all have, you know, their spots and their things that the crowd responds to, but none of those guys have had any direction in months for the most part, and now you can just throw Cesaro in there too. So now you've just got extra guys to get squashed on every twice a week by the four or five main event guys that the only people they seem to want to push.
And just talking real quickly about those lumberjacks, you have the tag team champions in that group who last pay-per-view had probably the best match on the card with the Wyatt family.
Probably one of the match of the year candidate.
Two out of three falls.
That's what I was going for. Match was incredible, and Harper and Rowan too. I mean, you've got great workers who are over with the crowd that can't get on a pay per view.
Yeah.
And, the card was rather stacked. We were talking about this before. I mean, I don't know what match I would have taken off. I mean, there was no Fandango. There was no, El Torito to be seen. So there wasn't a lot of filler in there. But you think you could find something for the tag team champs. And,
any matches that were more than one-on-one.
Right, right. And also, I mean, look, you got Sheamus, who... He holds the belt, a champion.
And he wasn't even a lumberjack.
He wasn't even a lumberjack.
Yeah.
So let's get into the first match on the main pay-per-view.
First, Brother came out.
Oh.
And plugged the network on the network.
Right. Hogan came out. It was very important for him to be there. He walked out. He stood on the main stage there and reminded us all that the WWE Network is $9.99. And then he went away. He earned his paycheck, I think, today.
Yeah.
I think he did. He did a couple of, he held his hand to his ear a few times. And
he walked away with that six-figure check that he made for today, probably.
Right, right. I think it was money well spent, probably.
Miz came out, cut a promo wearing a hooded snuggie.
Yeah, something like a backwards hooded snuggie. That was a weird look. Looked like he was trying to be like a angelic druid or something like that.
Yeah. Dolph came out, network cut out on me, dropped me a couple times, but that was the only time that I got cut out this pay-per-view. That was a huge improvement from the last two pay-per-views.
And we've watched the last several, I mean, since WrestleMania, and it was the best for as far as not cutting out on us.
Yeah.
We did skip around a little bit. There was some time.
I think
jumps.
WrestleMania was still probably the best quality-wise. But, yeah, this one was a far improvement from the last few.
That's good.
Good match. Miz playing a good heel. And Ziggler selling like crazy, took that really, really tough, like Bret Hart turnbuckle.
Oh, yeah,
bump
to the solar plexus.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, that was, what else can you say about Ziggler? He's the one of the best sellers in probably the history of the business. We could probably, I mean, he's in that Kurt Hennig, Bret Hart, Flair category as far as making someone look good.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously not one of the greats of all time, but in that particular avenue. And having him win the Intercontinental Championship, that's fantastic. Finally, you have a guy who's over, who the crowd pops for every time, who's interesting, who's been there before, and they give him a push. I was convinced, and I was talking to you about it earlier, that they were just propping Ziggler up a little bit just to feed him to Miz, to give Miz someone to go over that was a little more than just your everyday average jobber. And it was impressive. It was a pretty good match. And having the title on him is a good thing, I think, for the company.
Yeah, there was a little bit of a screwy part there where...
Yeah, the phaser into the skull-crushing finale.
Yeah, that I'm not sure even after the replay if it was a miss by Ziggler or if Miz just no-sold it. He almost looked like a Japanese wrestler getting fighting spirit who took a big move, just gets up, no sells it, and delivers his finisher.
It looked to me like he probably shouldn't have gone so far down with the Famouser, like he should have pushed his leg off. But he went about halfway down, almost like he was going to take the move full on. And, you know, he didn't go down into his hands, didn't bring his head down to the mat like he was taking the move full on. It just looked a little funky. I think somewhere there was either a miscommunication or a fuck-up. But in general, the match was good, and the finish was good. You know, they put on a good show. It was a smart match to open the pay-per-view. The crowd popped big for Ziggler. Are they going to keep the title on him? Is Miz going to just win it back at Night of the Champions? Well, you think with Bad News Barrett, I don't know when he's coming back, but you think a Barrett and Ziggler program would be really good.
Yeah, it would.
Those guys can both work. Those guys are both interesting. That could be a good 3-month kind of feud, and we've been saying it forever and ever. The IC title has been on, you know, Steamboat and Savage and Perfect and Bret Hart. Michaels, I mean, some of the best workers and some of the most prestigious people who've ever been in the wrestling business, and it has been a afterthought and joke for, I don't know, 10 years?
Yeah.
So
they got rid of it for a while
yeah.
And then brought it back.
But so now you've got at least a chance, and they've been trying to build towards this when they put the title on Barrett from Big E, and they've been trying to work, you know, the title, I think, as being a little more prestigious. But it had a hard time working. But I've enjoyed the Miz's work for the last month or so. I think he's doing a solid job. He gets heat, and people don't like him. That's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah,
it
might be a little close to X-Pac heat. Yeah, but he's a good villain because he makes people, even if it's legit, not like him.
Well, we've got a lot of heels that are cheered. You look at the Bray Wyatts. You look at Cesaro before they crushed him. That are cheered because that's just the nature of the anti-hero culture we live in. So it's good. It's kind of refreshing to see a heel that everyone kind of dislikes. That's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
So what was the next match?
Paige and AJ for the Divas title.
That one was a little surprising to me. I thought that Paige would probably go over just because I think that her heel turn has been fairly well executed. She's young. She's a good worker in general. And I was excited when she first debuted and thought that they were going to do a lot better better things with her. But the match was okay. I mean, I don't think... We actually were joking around on how many missed spots we were going to see in the match. And we really didn't see any.
And that sucks to even think that because they are considered two of the better workers in the Divas division. I was actually a little surprised by the result. I was thinking AJ was going to go over, that they'd continue the feud. But I guess maybe putting Paige over helps continue the feud a little bit more.
I mean, I don't see where else they go. They're going to stay feuding. There's really no one else on the main roster. There's good female workers, and there's people that they could put a program together with, but there's no one else at that level at this point. It's going to be... They'll be feuding for the next several months. So yeah. I think we can probably agree on that.
Yeah, probably.
And hopefully when they work together more in the ring, we'll get better and better matches, because they both have the ability to put on great work. So... hopefully it'll get a little bit cleaner and the storyline continues. I mean, I like seeing Paige in a very vicious role. That's kind of the role she played in NXT. Mm-hmm. It's just vicious anti-diva, and they haven't really played into that yet. And I think it's really good for the division. If they just have to drop the whole like you're my like the
it's
crazy,
sort of mean girl,
like. Yeah, but it, like the I'm crazy and we're still friends, and you know they play it up to where it could be kind of ambiguous whether she's playing mind games with AJ or she's mentally unstable, and they've done the mentally unstable diva to death.
Yeah,
they do it all. It's like their go to
Alicia Fox.
Yeah, but it's like their go to. It's like they can't just have a vicious, talented, good worker go on and beat the hell out of a babyface. She's got to be mentally unstable too, which is just cheap. You don't need that. You've got a young good worker. Let her do her thing.
Yeah, and happy birthday to Paige. Next up was the match that no one really understood how it worked: the flag match between Rusev and Jack Swagger.
I still don't know what a flag match is.
Yeah. In reality, it's really just a match.
It's just a match, and then when
you get your flag and anthem.
And your anthem's done, played. Which is the only difference, because every time Rusev wins a match, a giant flag explodes out of the ceiling and drops down. So the only difference between this match and every match in Rusev's past 3 months is that the anthem is of his country. Well, not even his country.
Yeah.
He's the Bulgarian brute. The Russian national anthem plays afterwards.
They really push that aside, he's not really Russian.
Of course. And Brigitte Nelson's doing a great job, too, I think. but the other big difference that you have to remember is that instead of the flag falling from the ceiling, it was raised. I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Yes, it is.
I have no idea what they were thinking with this. I try to be positive because, you know, we're all sitting back with this in hindsight. We have ideas in our heads that we think something should go a certain way. And who the hell are we? These people have been doing this professionally for years. But it seemed to me like you have two guys who are big, who can move, who can put on an entertaining match. We had no idea what a flag match was. I thought that it was, you know, they'd put them on a pole, you know, Vince Russo style, everything's on a pole, and then you get it and you wave it and you win. Obviously, they didn't do that. But what they chose to do was have Swagger put Rusev in an ankle lock early on and make essentially Rusev immobile the rest of the match when one of his big selling points is that he's a big athletic, he's an athletic big man.
Yeah.
So it was a plodding, kind of boring match. And this is what I was talking about earlier on. Maybe in retrospect, that was a good thing because it didn't give us what we expected. And maybe we'll look back on that a little more fondly down the road as this feud keeps going, because you know it's going to, or I assume it's going to. Mm-hmm. But it bogged down, I think. After that, I mean, you had two title switches, bang bang, and then you had which was a hot match. Swagger's super hot right now, and Rusev is getting his heel heat, and it was just kind of a boring match. And you know, Rusev sold the ankle injury for most of the match, and that was cool, but the finish was kind of weird. I mean, what did you think?
Yeah, I know why they did it. They did it to keep Swagger going because he didn't quit. He passed out. It makes him still look strong in defeat, and then having him, and that helps them continue the feud. Having Rusev kick Zeb after the match helps keep the feud going. So it'll obviously go at least to Night of Champions, and maybe that's where Swagger gets his revenge once and for all. I don't know what type of gimmick they'll pull. Maybe put the managers in cages. I don't know. And then RoboCop will come out and rip the door off.
I think, you know, we haven't seen that in a while. I think that would be wonderful.
Yeah, that's gone long enough that they can repeat that gimmick.
Yeah, absolutely. And they did have a RoboCop. When the second in the reboot series of RoboCop comes out, it's a little bit cheaper, a little more cheesy. Yeah. They're having a hard time selling it. And that's probably when Sting will come back. That's when Sting will finally sign. And Sting will come out
with RoboCop, and
he'll bring out RoboCop, and everyone that actually gets that reference will die laughing.
Yes.
And it'll be wonderful.
Then we go on to the Lumberjack match with Rollins and Ambrose. As we were saying earlier, this got some FaceTime for a lot of the guys who are just there and and that's not meant as a shot at them, because there are some really talented guys that were there. I thought this was a fun match. Other than the Lumberjacks being completely awful at their job of keeping the guys in the ring, and they actually used it as part of the story, as Kane comes down and scolds them all.
Right. But 20 WWE superstars, some of which were former title holders, some of them are current title holders.
Big guys.
Yeah, that can't keep two guys in a ring. But, I mean, this is pro wrestling. This is what we pay to see, essentially. It was a pretty good match. Look at the finish. It was one of the convoluted kind of finishes that we see so often, which was probably inevitable with the fact that this is a feud that's going to go on. It's going to have a blow-up match. I mean, I can see this like a Hell in the Cell kind of thing. They creatively got out of the ring, which was probably necessary because you wanted to see these guys brawling all over the place. They have that kind of feud going. The in-ring work was pretty good. It was the end was cheesy. I loved RVD in the group of 20 guys holding up Seth Rollins, and
not really just holding him up, just
standing there and then
him.
Just vaguely falling as a guy kind of brushed against his thigh. I maybe he's training to be a referee. Maybe that's his next gig. You know, he'll be taking ref bumps that knock you out. But it was an entertaining match. I thought it was pretty good. I mean, I love those guys. Those are two of the better workers in the company and two of the more interesting characters, and they've done wonderful things with them since putting up the Shield. I find them a lot more interesting than Roman Reigns is, and their feud has been, you know, what they've done since then has been much more captivating TV.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Seth and Dean were definitely the more experienced guys out of that group. Roman's still pretty green.
Yeah.
He's just has that good look. Dean and Seth have been wrestling on the indies for a long time, honed their crafts there. Both of them, Dean's always been a great talker. Seth's gotten a lot better at his talking over the past couple years. And they put on a good match. A pretty nice curb stomp by Ambrose on Rollins, but then the screwy finish. Dusty would be proud.
Yeah, this is building. It's Ambrose is going to go over. Seth has got the Money in the Bank briefcase. He doesn't need that win. Ambrose kind of does. We're going to get that. You know, the undercurrent of pro wrestling is always that evil is punished, right? At the end of the day, the good guy wins.
Yeah.
In the long term, you know, in the long con, the face is going to go over. So when we get that great, hopefully 20-minute match that those two can put on, that goes all over the arena, that has high spots, that has good chain wrestling to it, and Ambrose wins clean, that's going to be a great moment. And I think they've done a good job building to it so far. It hasn't been as satisfying to this point, but it's going to pay off.
I think it will, too. It is probably my favorite match of the night. Between that and Brock and Cena, and like we'll get into that that match in a little bit. But Bray and Chris Jericho were up next.
This has been, I have been very disappointed with that entire program. I was so excited to see Jericho come back. He's always been one of my favorites. Bray Wyatt is captivating. He's one of my favorite guys in the WWE right now. And the entire feud has just felt really, really flat to me.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but the match was... There was nothing wrong with the match. It was a solid match, but to me, there wasn't that excitement of good versus evil going on with it. And I don't know if it's just Chris isn't playing the face all that well. I've always said Jericho's a far superior heel than he is a face. I'd much rather see Bray work with a different face, but I know Chris likes to work with the young guys that he really believes in, and so if he's going to play face for an evil guy, he'll do that. But I don't think these two mesh really well, and that sucks because they're two of the best performers out there.
I think Bray is getting a little long-winded and a little too talky and rambly in his promos. People have mentioned that there really wasn't much of a reason for this feud, and Bray just saying over and over again that you said you are our savior is a little cheap. That was a long time ago, and it feels forced. They could have done just classic, you know, Bray wants to take out Jericho because he's Jericho, and I think that the mic work between two guys that are great on the mic has been pretty bad. And this was a much better match than their first match at the last pay-per-view. I thought it was, at least. And you feel like it's going to go forward to have one more. But I don't know. I want something different than from Bray Wyatt. I want something a little more specific to Jericho. Something maybe a little more poignant. And I want to see Jericho get a little more, as he said, I'm going to go a little nuts. I want to see him go a little nuts. I want to see him become more of that tweener, that heel character, even though he's on the face mm-hmm. side. I'd like to see that at least.
When these two are done, I would like to see the move on, and I'd like to see Jericho turn heel, and I would really like to see him work with Ambrose when his program with Rollins is done.
You'd imagine that would be a really good program.
Ambrose is the face, Jericho is the heel. I think that would work really well. I think Bray and Orton could have a pretty nice program together. They both kind of have the psychological game that they play.
Well, if you look at the Orton's face pops all night tonight, maybe we're going in that direction. We'll see. Even though it's hard because, you know, Orton's such a unlikable guy in general, but he was, I mean, we're going to get to that obviously, but he was the more over the two, it felt like to me.
There's tonight. No doubt about that. And I mean, Bray went over clean on Jericho. Good.
And he has to win this feud. Mm-hmm. But he just seems a little aimless. I don't know. Maybe Cena did take it all out of him. You know, he was going to turn Cena to the dark side. He was going to bring out the monster in Cena. And Cena is just Cena. And, you know, he beat him.
Well, maybe for Bray himself, like the human who plays Bray, he got a little discouraged after that because he thought he might have gotten more of a rub from Cena.
To me, Bray has got to take on a guy like Jericho and turn Jericho. Mm-hmm. You know, if maybe what you're talking about as far as Jericho being more of a heel and a better heel, maybe that's the thing. Maybe they wouldn't do it with Cena for obvious reasons, but maybe Bray can get that out of Jericho and turn Jericho heel on the WWE universe and get a win in his back pocket. Not just pinning a guy to the mat, but turning a guy to the dark side, so to speak. I think that's really what he needed from Cena, at least in a small way, which he didn't get at all. And he needs to do that to a big-time face. And I just...
Jericho is one of the biggest.
Yeah. There's not a lot of other guys out there that you can do that to.
Mm-hmm. We then had Steph and Brie.
What'd you think?
It wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be work-wise. I think we were saying, like, it seemed like they actually performed a little bit better than Paige and AJ did. And then you had the big swerve.
Right.
Nikki. And you called that. Like, right when she came out, you called that.
Well, this is not me. I mean, I read, you know, there's What Culture and Bleacher Report.
I didn't read anything into this potential
spoiler. I've read it several places online, and that's a possible way they could go to keep this feud going. You know, mm-hmm. the Bella Twins can feud with the authority in the background to keep things going on. Because, you know, Stephanie's not going to step into the ring every pay-per-view. So, you know, it wasn't just my own thing out of the blue. I kind of took it from somewhere else. I was really pleasantly surprised with the match. Stephanie McMahon has twice the moveset of Roman Reigns. So I think that's something that has to be said. People are going to think I hate Roman Reigns now. But it's true. I think she did a really good job. You know, it was a slow pace. It wasn't like they were going from spot to spot. But in general, they put on a pretty entertaining match. I thought it was good. And, I mean, I would have loved to see Daniel Bryan. Just because Daniel Bryan is very over and you miss not seeing him around.
That would have been a huge pop.
It would have been, but it wouldn't have worked for the story because if that would have happened, you wouldn't have had the swerve. And
it would take away from their story that they're doing, really.
Right. all in all, it was more entertaining than I gave it credit for, that I thought it was going to be. And it kind of justified the place it's had on Raw the last couple weeks. So, yeah, I thought it was one of the... It was one of the more entertaining things that happened on this pay-per-view.
Yeah.
It might not necessarily be the best match, but it was one of the more entertaining things, and that's good.
Yeah, and then after that, we had Roman and Orton. Even just from entrances, Roman got nothing, really, from the crowd, and Orton got a pretty nice pop. And all throughout the match, Orton's moves were getting more pops than Roman's were.
I just think he's more impressive in the ring. I did take a quite a long time off of watching wrestling, so I saw Orton when he was young in the beginning of Evolution, and he was just always a guy that you just wanted to punch in the face, I guess. He just looks like he thinks he's better than you. And that's what's played into his character so well over the years. And when I came back to watching it, you know, I know he's gone through different turns, twists and turns since then, but he's still that same guy. And I just never really liked Orton. This match, to me, is the best work I've seen him do since I started watching again, and kind of made me a fan of his. He led Reigns to the entire match. We've discussed this. He has a limited moveset. He's younger in the business. Hopefully he'll get better. He's way over, and they're going to push him to the moon. But he led Reigns to a pretty good match for one of the longer matches that Reigns has ever had, because he's always been protected by being in tag team matches. And I don't know. I just really enjoyed the work that he did today. And the crowd seemed to be, we were joking around, there'd be like a double turn somewhere in there.
Yeah.
And, you know, Bret Hart, Steve Austin thing, you know. I thought the match was pretty good. I am becoming less enamored of Roman Reigns over the last few months.
Yeah, it was a 16-minute match.
Yeah.
Most likely, with the exception of the ladder match, his longest match, he's had to work individually.
Sure.
Roman got the win. And this is really hard for me to say because I've never really been a fan of Randy. I think Randy actually deserved the win more.
Yeah.
He did lead Roman in that match, and it was all his work in that, and that was pretty impressive to me. But
I'd like to see this feud continue. I don't know where else Reigns can go.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. The ending didn't really leave open whether or not that's going to keep on going.
Well, you can imagine Orton dominated that entire match. You know, in the storyline, he was the aggressor the entire time, and he lost out of nowhere. So he could come out and just jump Roman tomorrow night from behind and continue the match going forward. Mm-hmm. I'd mostly like to see it because I liked their chemistry in the ring, and I'd like to see Reigns be challenged to keep up with him and that kind of really good methodical style that he has. And I think it could be more interesting to go forward with those two. And I'm actually very interested to see, there was some... when Seth Rollins won the Money in the Bank briefcase and Randy Orton didn't win the WWE Championship, I thought there could be some tension there where Triple H would come out and say, oh, you know, Seth Rollins got the job done, Randy.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't get the job done. And that might facilitate a face turn for Randy Orton. They obviously didn't go with that, but it's still it's an interesting possibility down the line.
Yeah, we'll see tomorrow night where they decide to go with the two of them. For the most part, I think almost every single one of these matches was left open to continue.
Most likely, yeah.
Normally, with your bigger pay-per-views, you're...
To blow off a few, yeah.
You're tying the stuff together. But and then we go into the main event that's definitely ended left wide open, Brock and Cena for... the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. If John Cena wasn't John Cena, this would have been a burial.
Oh, yeah.
Brock destroyed him. Cena got in a couple spots of offense.
Out of nowhere. Yeah. Kind of, I just know souls.
Fighting spirit.
37 German suplexes. But, no, it was brutal. I mean, he just kicked the shit out of him for... however long the match was.
Yeah, they don't have the official time up on that one yet.
This is, I mean, how do you, this to me is a head scratcher. I mean, how do you feel about the way this was booked?
If Brock were a full-time wrestler, I think that it's been booked great. Awesome promos from Heyman leading up to this. Even the video packages with when Brock's actually talking, showing his tough guy, not a single fuck given attitude. Cena's promo from last weekend, we were talking about how good that was.
Best mic work I've ever seen from him, yeah.
He came out looking serious and then just got destroyed. I mean, of course, not being a fan of Cena's work ethic, I kind of like seeing him lose, but I don't know how they're going to work with this, with Lesnar being a part-time guy. I mean, I guess they're going to rely on Heyman selling this week in and week out on Raw and SmackDown.
Yeah. Well, this is, like I had mentioned with the Swagger and Rusev match from earlier, I don't think anyone expected it to go this way. I mean, I was expecting a long match that was a lot of back and forth, a lot of back and forth. I expected Lesnar to win. Like, a lot of us expected Lesnar to win. But just that utter domination, hitting the F5 in like the first 30 seconds of the match, that was insane. I was not, none of us were expecting that, yeah. I don't think. So it's a little puzzling to do it that way with the way Cena's character is. I mean, this could lead to a personality tweak of Cena. We know we're not going to see a heel turn, but it could lead to a tweak of his personality subtly, possibly. Obviously, Lesnar's going to work a couple more pay-per-views before his, I think he's, what does he work, four a year or something like that?
Pretty much,
that's in his contract. So someone's going to have to come back and beat Brock Lesnar. It's not, but Reigns isn't ready.
No.
Daniel Bryan's hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And so you got Cena. So Cena's going to have to come back. Maybe he takes a couple weeks off of Raw. He comes back with a different attitude.
He finds himself or finds something else inside of
him.
The
rage or whatever he needs to do, the ruthless aggression that it takes to take out someone like Lesnar. I'd like to see a less jokey, comical Cena. I think a lot of us aren't. It's not just the moveset. It's not just the look. It's the way he carries himself. And I think a more serious John Cena is a good thing for business as well. I mean, the kids are still going to buy the wristbands if he kicks the shit out of somebody every now and then. So I'm hoping to see that, but it blew my mind. It was almost as shocking, not to the same degree as Lesnar beating Taker, because that was out of left field and we didn't see that coming either. But the fact that they booked this match this way, with the way they built it up, completely puzzling. And it might be genius. I don't know. Depending on where it goes, it could be brilliant. But I was just sitting there thinking, this is kind of bizarre.
I'm kind of curious, and this could be from really out in way left field, like way Randy, little league where the kid's like picking his nose.
Macho Man's dead. He can't come back.
Yeah. but because WWE doesn't like to take, well, they don't, not that they don't like to take, but they don't typically take ideas from Japan.
Mm-hmm.
This has been done a few times in Japan with special guys, to where they're in a feud with someone, they're getting beaten down so badly by them that they go away for just a little bit. Then they come back, though, in a different persona, but as the same person.
Mm-hmm.
Just a more aggressive and slightly darker version. They've done this with Jushin Liger. They've done this in New Japan. They've done it with BB Hulk and Dragon Gate.
By the way, this is why I keep Mike around, because he knows all these things that I don't know.
They had them in feuds and they would just get beaten up, and then they come back. Like BB Hulk has, like, because he's like he wears all white and he dances around, but then they put makeup on him and dress him in black, and he's just more aggressive to finish off his feud. And they did the same thing with Liger. I think that this would be a chance to possibly come up with a like there's always a whole Super Cena thing, but a real Super Cena.
I like the idea of putting makeup on John Cena. I was thinking maybe some rouge, maybe a nice dark eyeshadow. I think that would look. I think it would look good on him. I think he'd be a pretty lady.
And one of WWE's newest signings, Fergal Devitt, has been known to do that as well in some of his feuds in Japan. So I think that it's something that they could possibly use, and it does give Cena a new perspective. And
it's a tweak to his character.
And they could make new merchandise and sell that. And they don't have to keep him as that forever. They could just use it as his ace in the hole. Like, I mean, it kind of comes across as like a superpower, a transformation of sorts. But then he, once that feud's over, he goes back to being the regular Cena. And maybe a few years down the line, he has that another bad feud like that and needs to pull back out that super Cena.
I like the idea that you actually want to give John Cena superpowers. I think that if he was listening to this podcast, he would be pitching this to Vince McMahon right now. Well, we were going to talk about what we thought was going to happen going forward on Raw tomorrow and in the near future. And I've been racking my brain, and I have no fucking clue. Are we swearing on this podcast?
Yeah.
Okay. I have no fucking clue. I have things I'd like to see. I'd like to see a decent title run for Ziggler. Most of these feuds, I think, are going to continue. Mike just, I think, put down a good, you know, a possibility for Cena going forward. But I don't really have much.
Seth and Ambrose is definitely still going to go on, even though Ambrose has to film a movie soon. I believe it's the end of this month that he's going to need to be filming for a movie. I don't know how long that's going to take. Normally, movies are like at least a couple weeks of filming.
I think I was reading that all the WWE productions, the guys have been out for 6 weeks.
Okay.
So there's 6 weeks of filming. They might have taken them off TV for longer. Mm-hmm. It was about 6 weeks of filming.
So that's going to be well before Night of Champions. So I don't know if maybe they play injury angle.
And that's what I was going to ask you. So which episode of Raw or SmackDown does Seth Rollins injure Dean Ambrose for 6 weeks?
I think it's probably either tomorrow or the week after.
Right.
I wouldn't be surprised if they write him off tomorrow, just to give him some extra time. Then where do you go with him after that? Maybe you do play that jealousy role of Seth getting the job done and Randy not, and you can end Roman's and Randy's
feud. Why has Roman Reigns not really been that pissed off at Seth Rollins?
Yeah.
They could move in that direction.
Yeah.
They could give them a good feud. I mean, it's a little comical. You know, you've got a guy turns on two other guys, and one guy's like, oh, no, I don't really care. I'm going to fight this guy when you know, he gives up to Amber. Then obviously, want World of Professional Wrestling, I understand this, but I think we could use a good feud between those two.
Mm-hmm. That would make perfect sense to me.
I'm also pretty positive that we will see Hulk Hogan come out tomorrow night, most likely hawking the WWE Network. I think that's pretty much what. I think he's just going to travel with the WWE.
He's a traveling commercial,
and he'll guest host, which is so wonderful. It's so important. Every single episode, every single Raw and SmackDown at this point, I think it'd be amazing.
Oh yeah!
I mean, he sold those Hogan pasta makers, right?
Is that really something?
Pastamania, man.
Oh, I didn't know that.
You can look that up online. Pastamania.
I'll take your word for
George
it.
Foreman had the Foreman grill. Hulk Hogan had Pastamania.
You know that he says that he was offered the Foreman grill and he turned it down.
Hulk Hogan says a lot of things.
Yeah, he does.
I believe that most people in the business call him a liar.
That is the technical term,
right?
They have a lot they can work with still with the Authority and Brie, especially with Nikki turning.
Yeah, you imagine that's going to be with the Authority backing up Nikki, and you imagine that will be a feud for at least a month. Daniel Bryan will probably come back at some point before he's ready to wrestle, make another on-screen appearance. They should have done something. I really didn't like the you're having an affair with your rehab
and
specialist.
Bryan doesn't like it either.
Yeah, and that may be why they dropped it. But the fact that it's one of these other things, just like the stable they were going to form with Big E and Kofi Kingston. And
Xavier Woods.
Yeah, I mean, they put this thing out there, and it just goes away immediately.
Mm-hmm.
You'd hope that they have a little better idea of long-term planning to have something pay off a little bit better.
Yeah. Brian's looking like it. From what I read today, it might be another 3 months before he's back.
He had to have
a second surgery.
That poor cat, man. He had his wonderful WrestleMania moment. It was inspiring. It was wonderful. And then
Kane fucked him up.
But you imagine that there's no way he comes back in anywhere near the capacity he was before. He might not have to climb the ladder from the bottom. I mean, he'll still be over, but he was like Austin over.
Yeah.
When he left, there's no way that can maintain with all the time he's missed from TV and with other guys that they're pushing.
I don't know. I don't know if it's, and that's a thing that the WWE internally seems to debate, is whether or not Brian was over or the Yes Chant was over, because
right.
The Yes Chant still happens.
Right.
And I guess we'll see when he comes back. I, of course, want him to still be over. He's one of my favorite superstars out there. I can't believe I just said superstars.
Favorite superstars.
But I hope that he can be. We've talked about this for the past couple weeks, is Vince letting go of the reins and letting Triple H run the show, because Triple H would push the right guys. And
you'd hope.
Yeah.
And who are the right guys? Do we know who the right guys are? Does the internet wrestling community know who the right guys are? I don't think that's true. But there is a certain continuity, and there is a certain momentum that seems to be broken on a regular basis. And honestly, I think that's a very good segue into what we were talking about earlier. We're going to do one thing that we're going to rant on for a few moments about the wrestling business in general, not necessarily something that is about the pay-per-view or even necessarily in a storyline right now. Mine comes to me watching the Lumberjack match when I see one of my favorites, Bo Dallas, out there as a Lumberjack. Once again, after coming into the WWE right after WrestleMania, not a single match in a pay-per-view, I believe. Not a single feud working up to a match for a pay-per-view. And
I think he has had matches on a pay-per-view, but just like filler things that weren't originally announced.
He hasn't worked a single long program with anybody.
No.
And we're now hearing and seeing online people reporting that they've cooled on Bo Dallas and his push has been canceled. This makes me very sad. Bo Dallas, I had no expectation with this character. I did not watch him in NXT. I was mildly annoyed the first couple times I saw him on TV. But Mike knows that as time's gone by, I have become a believer, and I think he's incredible. He's got good mic skills. He has, if Randy Orton has a punchable face, Bo Dallas has the most punchable face in the WWE universe. You
that
just want to sock him in the face every time he smiles. It's wonderful. And the celebrating after a suplex and everything he was doing, mocking the great Khali and El Torito, it was he made me be entertained by El Torito and the great Khali. That might not be the best thing in the world, but it was entertaining. It was fun. And the crowds were getting over with him. The crowds were, I heard "We Believe" chants. He was getting popped for his entrances. People were, I'm seeing t-shirts in the audience. And they go from this, you know, 16 and Bo, 17 and Bo, JBL putting him over, to him losing to R-Truth.
Twice.
And now nothing. And I think who did he job to on SmackDown?
I think it was Dolph.
It was probably Dolph, yeah. And it's just a shame. You've got a guy who is organically getting over. He doesn't need to be the world champion. He doesn't need to be the Intercontinental champion. He's a guy with a good gimmick, an interesting look, good mic skills. He hasn't done much in the ring yet, but there's plenty of guys who don't do much in the ring that have plenty of TV time. You need even lower mid-card guys to be entertaining and fill out your show, to have storylines, to keep you actually wanting to watch Raw for 3 hours. And you've got the guy, and you decide to stop pushing him. I understand not pushing Adam Rose. Not because Adam Rose is not a great performer, but because Adam Rose was booked really terribly, and the creative was bad, and it's uninteresting. That's not his fault. That's creative's fault, at least in my opinion. But you've got a guy who's actually getting over with the crowd, and you squash it. It's just like Cesaro. There's no reason why these guys should be being buried on a card with so many blank faces with no personalities. So now you've got Cesaro and Bo Dallas just added to that mix. You know, maybe they figured, oh, Alberto Del Rio's gone. We need two guys to replace him as faceless mid-carders. And I just think it's a shame. I know you weren't a huge Bo Dallas fan, but...
I was starting to get on him.
Sorry, to believe.
Yeah. I didn't want to say it, but you forced it out of me. Now, he was, and that's the thing. He was getting over, and you can't really argue with that.
Yeah.
And when I was saying earlier, is pushing the right guys. To me, the right guys are the ones who the fans want to see.
Right.
And they're the ones that they want to chant for, that they want to cheer for or boo. Like, booing is a great reaction. It's better than just having nothing.
Of course. There's a lot of silence on SmackDown tapings.
Yeah. And They're really dropping the ball with him. Cesaro too. I mean, we've already talked about how we feel that he's being just devalued. But to me, like, one that the internet community, especially in the indie wrestling community, has always gone to as their way of showing WWE dropping the ball and getting frustrated is Colt Cabana. I mean, that guy has become an indie legend for his work in Ring of Honor, Pro Wrestling, Gorilla, over into Chikara, Noah, wrestling in Europe. He's so entertaining from his mat work to his charisma. I'm a big fan of comedy matches when done properly. Mm-hmm. Like, WWE doesn't seem to know how to do a good comedy match. It's like, we'll do our idea of a comedy match is put Great Khali with Santino Marella. But no, you can have some great technicality in a comedy match, and Colt just knows how to do that, and he can bring it out in almost anyone. Like, people who could be the most serious guys, he can get to crack a little bit and get out of their element, and they even find themselves in the match like, what am I doing? I'm not this type of guy. He had the chance in WWE. He went through developmental, and then he was brought up to the roster as Scotty Goldman, a Jewish wrestler. and he got squashed in every single one of his matches, and they were looking at possibly using him, turning him into a commentator, which would have been great because he's great at talking, and then they got rid of him. He's made the best of it by creating one of the best wrestling podcasts out there right now, The Art of Wrestling. I'm okay to plug that because it's highly entertaining. He talks with all these other wrestlers about just their careers in wrestling and why they love what they do, and like, man, they really missed the boat on that guy. And they could have made money off of him.
Well, and there's a big difference between not having a thing, something to do with a guy, and dropping the ball in their character development, in their TV time. There's a big difference in that. I mean, there are a litany of examples of guys that had success in WCW and not WWE, and vice versa. And where you just think, whoa. If WCW would have held on to Steve Austin and Triple H, what could they have done with them? Well, probably nothing, because they didn't have anything for those guys to do.
Undertaker, Nash, and Hall.
All those guys. They didn't have anything to do with those guys. And there's another thing altogether when you when the guy is actually on TV with a good gimmick, getting over, and then they sour on him for some reason. That is dumbfounding to me. I don't want to be the kind of person, and I had mentioned to you this earlier, I don't want to be the kind of person that comes on and says, oh, I know exactly how things should go, and I'm just going to bitch and piss and moan about things not happening the way I want them to happen.
Yeah.
I will do that on my own personal time. But it seems illogical to me.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. And while our ideas here are slightly similar, they are different in that aspect. I just think, especially with the way that WWE wants to go with their television as being PG, kid-friendly,
right,
and such, Colt can be a very kid-friendly, mm-hmm, person. They've been trying to find that masked guy who can take over for Rey with the kids, because the kids love Rey Mysterio, and they thought that Sin Cara could do that, but then that guy was awful, and the guy who's playing Sin Cara now isn't the original guy, and they're still burying him. Like, I inherited this mask, but you're still going to get the reputation of him.
I just wonder, because there's a lot of guys down in NXT right now that are over with the... I mean, it's a small crowd. You know, you don't know if it's going to translate to the main roster, but talented guys, good workers with well-defined characters. Where the hell are these guys going to go?
Yeah.
There are so many, I mean, and this is no insult to anybody on that roster, because I'm sure every one of those guys puts their heart into it, but worthless characters on that roster right now. Guys are just, they're never going to do anything with. They're never going to give any, half those guys are never going to get a storyline, really, to get them through anything. So where are the three new guys that you mentioned that were just signed by WWE, where are they going to go? Yeah, how are they going to have enough? Where do they fit in? It seems like they have to get rid of half the roster and bring in a bunch of new guys.
Yeah, and this is actually something that we talked about this week, about possibly doing on a future episode, is kind of like a fantasy roster, and like picking and choosing who in WWE we would use.
Like a power rankings kind of thing, and you know, who are the guys that should be getting the majority of the TV time and mm-hmm. putting the feuds.
Them in a feud for what belts and things like that. I think that would be fun, because there are guys who are being misused on the main roster right now that deserve more time, like the Usos. Like, I mean, where's this Gold Dust and Stardust thing going? What's the Cosmic Key that's been going on for so long?
I've got $25 that we never find out what the Cosmic Key is.
Probably not. I think that Sandow's extremely underused. I think that he's an entertaining character. They did fire a bunch of guys that weren't being utilized a few weeks back.
And they purged like 9 guys, I think it is, and they've still got 20 guys at the Lumberjack match that are not using.
Yeah. I mean, it's not that I promote people not having a job, but like, really, does Great Khali have to be around anymore?
Listen, he's big in India, my friend.
Yeah.
He's box office magic in India.
Yeah, because they go over to India once every 2 years.
That's very important. Come on.
Like, where someone like Kevin Steen, who speaks French and is big in in Quebec.
Nice save.
they go into Canada far more often than they go into India, and Kevin Steen's also an extremely good worker and talker, and I see a lot of the Stone Cold-esque promo, and then mixed with a Vader, Mick Foley-like performance, because he's a big guy who's agile
mm-hmm.
and does flying moves, but is one of the best brawlers in the game.
Are you watching NXT right now?
I haven't watched it in a few weeks, but... There's a lot of guys on that roster that I like. Like, I really dig Tyler Breeze.
Yeah.
I really like Sami Zayn.
I mean, it's 1 hour.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering how those three new guys are going to fit in that roster.
Yeah, they can barely fit their core of guys into a 1 hour show a week.
Have you seen the Vaudevillains?
No, I have not.
I don't know why, but I fucking love those guys. It's the most bizarre thing. It's a like vaudevillians, right? Mm-hmm. Play off of it, and there's like an old timey strongman. Yeah, kind of thing. Like, wow, yeah, it's really bizarre. And
handlebar mustache.
A couple handlebar mustaches. Yes, it's when I leave. You should pull out the last NXT and watch it. It's just bizarre. It's silly. But I have a feeling that in that small confines of the Full Sail Arena that it works really well. Because people just, they have fun with it.
Orlando has a really good, like, hardcore wrestling group there. Because you got the TNA's been there for a long time. And you have a sort of jaded... Or not really jaded, but fans of TNA that feel like they've been let down recently by that product and are like, oh, we got this new thing. It's all of the new up and coming guys for WWE. They'll probably focus more on the wrestling itself. So let's go watch that, and they get really vocal about it, and that's great.
I don't think they call them divas. I hope not.
I think they do call them divas.
Do they call them divas? Yeah. God damn it. I hate that. But the women's matches that I've seen on NXT have been phenomenal. I mean, they actually give them storylines.
Yeah.
They actually have personalities.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible what you can do when you have a reason to do the things that you're doing.
Yeah. Charlotte, Ric Flair's daughter, has the belt right now.
Yeah, she's a champion.
And... what's it? Sasha Banks is...
she's there. She wrestled this broad named Bayley.
Yeah. Kind of kooky.
Yeah, yeah. Like an 80s hairstyle kind of thing. But that was a great match that I saw the last episode that they posted on the WWE Network, which is $9.99, by the way. You get all the pay-per-views.
I wish they had like an affiliate program that we could get a part of.
Oh, I got 35 cents for every time I say it. I'm on the payroll.
But yeah, it would be interesting to see where it goes, because those three signings, Kenta, Fergal Devitt, and Kevin Steen, I'm big fans of all three of them. I think Kevin Steen will do all right. I think Devitt will do great, although I'm not very high on what Kenta's going to be able to do. Great worker, but he doesn't speak English very well, and... you know, WWE has a great reputation of using Japanese wrestlers properly.
I'm sure he'll be in a kimono at some point, and they'll dress him up as a sumo. They do a good job with that, I think.
Yeah.
And they're very racially sensitive, I think, at the WWE. Vince McMahon is pretty confident it's still like 1978.
Be a star. Right. Don't bully. We'll see where some of those guys go. Like I like Adrian Neville, but I don't think he's ready for the big roster. He doesn't really have much personality.
No, he's impressive in the ring. His moveset is diverse. He's exciting to watch, but I haven't seen him. A lot of it comes down to its facial expressions. You know, if you watch Dolph Ziggler in a match, and you watch him after someone kicks out. I mean, it's almost ridiculous how expressive he is. But you look all the way down to Vince McMahon as a performer, or Stephanie, or Triple H, or The Rock. It's not always just in the words they're saying. It's the way their body language is, their facial expressions, which sell what's going on. And those kind of, one-look people that always look like they have a stone face. Those guys have a hard time getting over.
Yeah.
They just don't have personality.
And you can work on that down there, and that's what NXT's for. Seth Rollins did that when he went from ROH to NXT. I always thought that he still really needs to work on his promo and his charisma. And after time down there and coming up to the main roster, he's gotten good at his promo work. He seems comfortable with himself, and you can always tell when a guy just kind of doesn't seem comfortable in talking about themselves or their enemy.
You want to talk about comfortable, and this is just something I wanted to bring up. You look at what Cody Rhodes has done with Stardust. Now, whatever you might think about the gimmick, it's kind of silly, it's kind of bizarre, it's kind of stupid, but that dude is doing everything in his power to sell that character,
yeah,
to be that character. And it comes across on the screen. I have no idea where it's going. I don't even know if I want to know where it's going. But every time he's on the screen, you can tell he's putting everything he has into it. And that goes a long way. And whether or not this ends up some kind of bizarre swerve to fight Gold, who the fuck knows? But hopefully he'll bring that part of his character into whatever he does next. Because it's been pretty fucking impressive.
Yeah. You cannot fault that guy for, even if it was a shitty gimmick that he didn't want to do and they're just testing him, he's doing his best to to show them, like, you can't keep me down by giving me something like this.
I don't change the channel.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm disappointed I didn't, but I don't change the channel. It's going to be a train wreck, but it might be beautiful.
I think we covered most of the stuff that we wanted to for this. We're at an hour and 5 minutes.
It's pretty impressive, Mike.
Yeah.
We're like seasoned professionals.
Yeah, we were thinking, like we'll just go through everything really fast and it's been 20 minutes.
You're a seasoned professional. Yeah. And you've carried me through this podcast, and I appreciate
you've
that.
You've done a very good job. I guess we have a lot of ideas of segments and such that we want to do on future episodes.
This is kind of a dry run.
Yeah.
Feel a little comfortable with the concept.
We knew that with the pay-per-view, that was going to be the main talking point for that, and probably other future episodes that are right after pay-per-views will be just like the same, but ones in between. We'll talk about Raw. We'll talk about SmackDown. We have some pretty fun ideas coming up with, like, fantasy bookings and how we would have done this and that, and or what we think is going to come up soon. And one that I that you came up with that I really like is legal in wrestling. Things that just get done in wrestling that are legal but would be highly illegal in the real world.
And the beautiful thing about that is there are so every week there's six. Yeah. So you never run out.
Yeah. And just talking about what we think is might be wrong with the product, but more importantly, what's right with the product? Like, everyone always wants to talk about the negative of what WWE is doing wrong. A lot of times they're doing some things that are really right. And
We're fans for a reason.
Yeah.
We absorb hours of material every week. Both of us are subscribers to the WWE Network, $9.99 a month. And We like the product. We enjoy the product. We get frustrated with it sometimes because we're passionate and we hope it goes in a certain direction. But at the end of the day, we're fans, and there's a lot to enjoy about the entertainment and the quality that they put out.
Yeah. And we wouldn't be watching it if we didn't like it, and we wouldn't be doing a podcast now about it.
Well, I might, because I just don't have much else going on in my life.
But thanks to everyone who listened to this first episode. Hopefully you want to come back and hear from us again. And if you want to get involved with talking in the conversation, we have a Twitter account. It is at Miss Spots. We also have a Facebook page that you can go and like, and you can write on the wall or whatever, and that's facebook.com/MissSpotsPodcast, and our website is MissSpotsPodcast.com, where you can listen to these episodes until we get them up on iTunes. It'll probably take a week or so to get up on iTunes, and then at that point, you should be able to find us and subscribe on there. I guess until then, we won't be doing this every week, probably like every other week or so.
Until we have just a massive following and we just can't deprive you good folks of any more.
Yeah.
Then it'll probably be once every other day or so.
Then we'll quit our jobs making beer and just podcast all the time, come up with our own network.
Right.
And just give you a bunch of content.
Make it happen, people.
Yeah. Until next time, guys, we'll catch you later.